Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Brainstorm, episode 107. Today, we have a very special guest, Tasha. Thank you for joining us. It's been a while, but we're here. We're ready to talk Tesla earnings, robotaxi, humanoid robots, everything Elon Musk, Tesla, and the future. So, Tasha, I'll kick it off to you. Would love to hear your thoughts, opinions about this most recent earnings from Tesla.
Sure. Thanks, Nick. So last week we had Tesla earnings call. We wrote about it in our newsletter. I think that on the robotaxi front, what we heard on the call is definitely, Tesla's always getting increasingly confident in its robotaxi service, but I feel like, you know, they've sort of one-upped themselves in that level of confidence on this past call. Elon had said that, now based on what they're seeing in the improvement in FSD and, you know, this future shift towards unsupervised FSD, that he feels confident enough to scale capacity as fast as possible. He said that he thinks Tesla could get to 3 million units of vehicles produced at an annualized rate in the next 24 months because of this. And, he also, which is what we touched on in the newsletter, he mentioned that Tesla's adding reasoning to the car. And so we also saw a public video of Ashok, the head of AI at Tesla, talking about the difference between open loop and closed loop simulation, which is basically, you know, is in simulation, are you just testing the vehicle, sort of like the actions that you'd want the vehicle to perform against what actually happened with human drivers? Or in simulation, are you able to have the actions of your simulated car affect other things that are happening on the road? And in other words, like change the simulation by the car's input. And so again, in a similar note, adding reasoning to the car is basically this idea that the car, you know, is able to determine sort of how the suggested actions or the actions that the vehicle would take would sort of affect the rest of traffic, sort of interpolate that. So, that's all to say that this is, you know, one step closer to launching unsupervised FSD and to having, true full autonomy. They committed to taking out the person that sits in the vehicle now in parts of Austin by the end of the year. And they also committed to launching in 8 to 10 metro areas by the end of the year. So...
Is the car not reasoning now? How do like and do we have a sense for when that like they always name, hey, these are things we're doing kind of like in the R&D lab. Do we have a sense for is that going to roll out as a part of this set of vehicle updates to the user and it's already rolled out to Robotaxi or we don't really know?
I believe he said we will add reasoning, which to me made it sound like I expect all the latest updates to flow to the Robotaxi platform first before reaching the customer version of the software. So, you know, it's tough to say like exactly what the car like, you know, yeah. Do they have any, clearly he's making this statement, which I think implies that at least by their definition of what reasoning is currently, the car isn't performing that. But so my interpretation was that this would go to the Robotaxi platform first. And that is currently not in it. But I don't know, Brett, what do you think?
And they laid out like this whole, they said there's going to be a 10x increase in the number of parameters. It seemed as if they implied that that was going to push to kind of like the current set of chips. Yes. But it was also unclear to me, is that like V15 or something that's going to go Robotaxi first? Or is that in kind of like the staged set of releases that they're pushing to cars now?
I'm trying to remember exactly what he said about the parameter count, because I think that, based on with V14, right, it did sound like the increase in parameters that they had sort of forecasted would happen before were coming out with that rollout. So my guess is that this is with some future rollout on, you know, it's honestly, I'm not quite sure whether or not it would be like with a next generation chip. It sounded more near term to me than that.
My interpretation. All right, go on, Nick.
No, I have two questions. One, is the correct way to understand the production ramp in that the confidence is there for robotaxis. So they feel confident to scale production because even if there's not consumer demand for the car itself, they can throw these cars into the fleet and start generating cash. Is that the correct assumption?
Yeah, I think so. You know, they talked a lot about on the call how the purpose or like a big purpose of building the CyberCab platform was to lower the cost per mile. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, you can only do that once you enable full autonomy. So, and yes, you're touching on an important point, which is we think that the CyberCab is much more important for a fleet operator model than it is for, you know, personal consumption, personal individual buying, although it looks like that'll be possible. You know, in terms of scaled robotaxis, that's really more of a fleet model, we believe.
Got you.
Yeah. And then, I mean, if you're going to commit to like, we're building cars without steering wheels and we're doing it at scale, then you better have your autonomy system working because those are really, really not useful otherwise.
Right. And then is the hardware three, where is that? Because that's a selfish question for me because that's my...
Yeah, you have a hardware three car.
I have a hardware three model. And I think I'm stuck on version 12.6.6 something. Am I doomed? Am I not getting FSD or do I have to go and get upgraded? How does this work for us all that are stuck in hardware three lane?
Well, it's a pertinent question because I feel like they've kind of gone back and forth on this, but it was incrementally positive on the call. So Tesla's current CFO mentioned that he has a hardware three car. They said something to the effect of, you know, we're not giving up on hardware three. So, and I know Brett, you think that they will kind of, it'll be some dumbed down version of the model that they'll put on hardware three vehicles. Of course, it's coming after everything that comes on the later generation chips.
I think the way to think about it is it's given our cost decline or performance per cost improvement in AI expectations, which is really how much performance can you get in a chip of a certain size? Hardware three vehicles will be as capable as hardware four vehicles are, just at a 1 year delay perpetually, so long as they feel like it's important for them to support those customers. So I think that then for you, it's like a value kind of judgment of like, am I willing to like schlep myself around and be a poor schmo driving my own car? Or do I want to like, as soon as possible, have the car drive myself? So, and they are trying to like provide the opportunity to just transfer that FSD license over to the new vehicle. And so then it's kind of like, you know, you can trade in the vehicle for some amount of money. I don't know.
Yeah.
And time to upgrade, Nick.
I know. Yeah, Nicky. Well, they convinced me to upgrade.
FSD transferable? Is it like,
well,
so or they, is there windows?
They're incentivizing people like in these windows. Okay, yeah. Now at this period of time, you can transfer the FSD that you might have pre-bought, the pre-bought version of FSD, of course, mm-hmm. To a new vehicle. So that's how they've incentivized a number of people to move over to the hardware for a platform. But, you know, they did seem to recommit to hardware three somewhat on the call. So,
yeah.
But really, if you
like email them nicely and be like, I want to transfer my FSD, they will happily get that FSD license off of a hardware three vehicle. Like that's really what they would prefer, I think. Yeah.
They have the capability to do it. So.
So a nice email needs to be written.
Wait, Nick, you got to get the latest version of the software.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Well, the one I have now is pretty good.
It is, but I did get upgraded to V14 yesterday and tried it for the first time. And it is, in very qualitative and subtle ways, definitely better than V13. So it just feels like there's a degree to which it's like, this works, but you have to kind of like babysit it, not because it doesn't work, but because you're kind of, particularly if you're a new user of FSD, you're not sure that it's going to work. Whereas in V13 still lived more of its life in that land where I'm very comfortable with it, but my wife is not as comfortable with it. V14 just feels more intentional in terms of the moves it's making. And so I can imagine somebody coming fresh to it, just having more confidence in kind of the software. Cause it's like, oh, it not only is doing something right, but it's also doing it right in a way that you feel like it knows what it's doing, which is a subtle but important thing. And so I think it is, you know, a definitive upgrade. And I, you know, and at least I haven't experienced it, but other people posting have said it also has like some moments of call it like a little more break stabbiness or stuff where it still needs edges kind of sanded off in the development process, which I believe, but haven't experienced. Net, it's really astounding. Like it really is, if you take a step back, that you can buy a car that's also a chauffeur at your option at any time, you know, and not a full-time chauffeur right now, but probably within the next 12 months, a full-time chauffeur is wild. It's so wild. It's like such a huge human uplift that we'll achieve, at least so you can like play Candy Crush while you're ostensibly driving, right. You know?
Yeah. And I like that tidbit from the call, which was, okay, as soon as you can just be on your phone the entire time you're in the vehicle, everyone will want it. And in fact, people already do that. It's just wildly unsafe. So it'll make that behavior safe.
Yeah.
Tasha, well, anything else from earnings that you pulled out?
Well, we haven't yet touched on the Optimus updates.
Yeah. Brett, you think once robotaxi is solved, there is a connection to when humanoid will be fast following?
Yes. And okay, so here's the logic. As it turns out, robotaxi is an incredibly difficult, challenging problem. We know this because I think I did my first unit economics on a robotaxi in 2011. So here we are in 2025. And that was because like it seemed as if Waymo had demonstrated they could do it. They had their little koala cars that they were building. They're running around. It's like you can hop in one of these and not die. They were demoing like, hey, let's put a blind person behind the wheel of this thing and show that it can get you from place to place. And then the excruciatingly slow, long development process to make these things work, including having to shift over to a full AI stack in order to do it, which Waymo maybe has not yet fully accepted. We don't know. Has taken a long time. And you could look at what's happening in the humanoid space right now and be like, well, that looks a lot like robotaxis did 10 years ago. And so there's this question. Tesla is talking about scaling Optimus. There are private companies that are raising money at very high valuations, including InterVenture Strategy. We're invested in Figure others. So how hard is the humanoid robot problem is like an interesting and open question. And I think because we're about to cross the commercialization threshold for robotaxi, I think we can say how much harder is it than robotaxi to get a sense for how much at least AI compute power we're going to have to throw at the problem to solve it. And there's wide error bars here, but I think it's 200,000 times harder. And so to get there, it's just like, it sounds like a number pulled out of a hat, but it's not because you can kind of disaggregate the complexity of the problem into the various things that the robotaxi has to, or the humanoid robot has to do compared to what the robotaxi has to do. So an easy one to understand is a robotaxi takes, in Ashok's presentation, it takes 2 billion tokens in context, and it compresses it into like basically two outputs. And I would argue three, but he's doing one pedal driving, right? It says like, where am I steering and what am I doing with the gas, right? So it's just two outputs. Now think about the human body and how many like actuated outputs you have. You have, you know, every single joint in your body, you're making subconscious decisions about how to move them and to what degree to move them, how much force to exert on them. And so the difference in kind of the number of decisions goes from 2, 3, you know, maybe you're doing derivatives of them. So on robotaxi, you have 5 different kind of like degrees of freedom to something like 20 to 40, depending on how, you know, it's not like I'm able to bend this joint independently of these other joints, but there's some kind of like simplification of the action signals I'm sending out. That's a big multiplicative difference in the complexity of the problem. And there's different categories of that complexity. Like the road space is really designed to be easy to drive in. It's very structured. You have like, don't cross over the yellow line. And here's a big bright light that tells you to stop. And the number of the diversity of objects you have to deal with is much simpler. I mean, it's basically just pedestrians and cars and bicycles. And, you know, you could say there's maybe tens of objects versus when I'm walking around my house, there are hundreds, maybe even thousands of different types of objects that I'd have to think about differently. A coffee cup is different from a power drill. And so as you stack up these different layers of complexity, they compound, and the full multiplication, as you can read about in the newsletter, leads to an expectation that's a 200,000 times more difficult problem.
And then, like, as a reader, what do I do with that number? Okay, it's 200,000 times more difficult. What is that, you know?
Well, the reason that's important is because we know roughly how much AI compute Tesla has thrown at RoboTaxi in order to solve it. And so we can see the degree to which they are error reducing their solution to the RoboTaxi space. And then basically say, well, humanoid robots is just 200,000 times more error reduction they need to get to. And so you can make an estimate for how much AI compute, even with the kind of software rate of improvement we anticipate in AI to solve humanoid robots. And it's probably on the order of, I mean, the falling out of our model, you need basically $200 billion in AI compute spend to get there. But I'd say it's safe to say it's $100 billion plus, because it depends on, are they spending it on NVIDIA chips? Are they able to not spend all that gross margin on NVIDIA? It would be bad to ship 75 or I guess $150 billion in gross profit to NVIDIA if you could produce it yourself as competitively, which Elon's planning to do. And so there's some kind of efficiencies they could get on the hardware side to get there. But then if you take our model and you say, hey, we're throwing a ton of the RoboTaxi cash flow at AI compute, I think the software problem for humanoid robots is solvable in the 2029, 2030 timeframe, but it's going to be a long, hard investment cycle is my belief.
So $100 billion dedicated specifically for humanoid robot software training.
Yes.
Which is
yes, like, at least I would say 100 to 200, I think is fair. And that's part of the reason, you know, Elon keeps talking about this. Hey, we really need to be able to train on these distributed chips that are in the vehicles, because he's probably back of the envelope how much money he needs for this. And he's like, wow, that's a lot of money. And here we are like putting these computer chips in RoboTaxis and they're not operating as computer chips for half the time. Let's try to, you know, use all of the resources at our disposal to train this stuff, because it's going to be such a hefty training load. So they are thinking about ways to do this more efficiently. And I think people generally underestimate, just like a decade ago, people looked at the Koala cars from Waymo, including me, and said, wow, they've basically solved this. And now, you know, here they are, Waymo's still on such a kind of like fragile stack, they're having trouble scaling. I think people see the Chinese robots doing like kung fu fighting and wild dance moves, and they'd be like, oh, well, obviously that's something that's really hard for me as a human to do. The robot can do it. Therefore, it should be able to do all the simple things that I do throughout my life without even thinking about it. And actually in robotics, those simple things that you don't even think about are the hardest things. And so I think that there's a lot of kind of software development that needs to happen, leaving aside like the challenge of manufacturing these things and making them work. Just the software side is going to cost a lot of money and resources and pain, sweat, and tears to get there.
Yeah. And, you know, I was talking to someone who's kind of skeptical of robotaxis recently, and they asked me this question because, you know, they mentioned 8 to 10 metro areas. And, you know, it's clear that regulation is like, in terms of the rollout, they have to get approval from regulators to do full autonomy and paid rides and all of that. And it's different state by state rate. Some states are a lot easier than others. You know, the question was like, are robotaxis, okay, if they're going to use the cash from robotaxis, are robotaxis a gating factor for, as a scaling of the robotaxi network, a gating factor for Optimus improvement? What do you think,
Brett? To some degree. In, if you need $200 billion, you have to generate $200 billion in cash flow to get there. So Yes, if they're not scaling commercially on robotaxi, I think that probably capital probably is a constraint for Optimus development. Whereas in robotaxi, they're well past the point where they're capital constrained. I think that it's more execution constrained in terms of scaling production. I think on Optimus, they will need a lot of capital to do it. And so if robotaxi were to be delayed, I would expect basically like the shape of the curve on the commercialization of Optimus to roughly match the shape of the curve on trajectory of robotaxi kind of rollout lagged by 4 or 5 years. I think that's fair. And I think that it is now, I think, impossible to look at what's happening in robotaxi and say, oh, this is, you know, 36 months away. This is never going to happen. I think that's insane. Like if you look across, what's nice about AI is you can look at these different domains and you can kind of cross compare them time-wise, where it's like you have the writing, coding kind of knowledge workspace that's to the left of robotaxi, which is to the left of humanoid robots, which is to the left of everything that's going to happen in biology. And what we've seen in the kind of the language space is once you begin to really penetrate with an AI specific approach, a benchmark, you just fly through it. You don't hit like a top end ceiling unless the benchmark is designed to have like an artificial ceiling. And so I think robotaxi, the version that I drove last night, is amazing. And there is a lot of assurance that the next version of it that gets released 6 months from now or even 12 months from now will be even more amazing. And it's very clear that like they're right on the edge of the commercialization threshold. So you could make a claim that, oh, he's too optimistic about taking the safety drivers out of Austin now. But I would, you know, give him 9 months and it would be shocking if they didn't have them out. And then once they have them out, I think that people will, it will be politically poisonous for regulators to prevent these things from propagating. In LA, where Waymos are available, I know parents who are sending their, you know, 14 and 13 year olds around to all of the overscheduledness of middle school and high school, and they love it compared to Uber. Well, imagine it's like a third the price of Uber and the same experience. I think people will just use the heck out of it. And so if you live across a state border and like your neighbor is like, what are you doing? I just have my, you know, robotaxi drive my kid to soccer practice. And you're like, why am I stuck in the car doing this? I just think it'll be very hard for states to hold the line without it being actually damaging politically to the state leaders. And so then they will like politicians, the simplest way to understand politicians is what do they need to do to keep themselves in power?
Get votes.
Yeah.
Okay. Given the conversation and our ongoing thread of prediction market predictions, I found one on Polymarket. Will Tesla release Optimus by June 30th, 2026? General release available for public purchase.
I mean, it's got to be like, what, 10, 14% of? No.
No?
The answer is no. Tasha? By mid-26, is an Optimus going to be for sale?
Yeah, that's pretty
first up. No.
For us to buy, no.
You'd expect to see like some meaningful level of progress before they. I think they have said though within the next year, but I mean that's like within the next 6 months, so right, or a little more than 6 months, but still.
I think that's. I would buy it maybe 3%. I think 3%. That's a really long odds. All right, Nick, where are you?
I'm gonna go no as well.
Okay, I have another like one.
Very I have close.
Another long odds one. In fact, I would pair trade these on Kalshi. Will Tesla's robotaxi be offered in California without supervision this year? And you can buy yes at 10%. Will they take basically safety drivers out from behind the wheel in California this year?
I'm taking yes.
Well, it's an interesting one because it's like, there's like two pieces of that. Do they have the capability to do it is a question.
Right.
And then, but then it's like, do they actually have the regulatory approval? And we know that California, in terms of, you know, the states that currently offer robotaxis is the most complicated in terms of hoops to jump through. I would guess that they have the capability to do it. It's really just a question of, do they have the paper signed to do it, right?
Right. Well, they need a certain number of miles in order to get certified. But Tasha, you're kind of dodging. So where are you? It's 10%. Are you doing yes or no?
Well, if the question is like, will it happen? I would say that I would expect the regulation process to be longer than the next like couple of months that we have in the year. But I think that in a pure capability that it would be possible. Like if regulation
so
was not
I'm hearing you're saying no. I'm hearing you're yes. saying no.
Yeah, I would say no, but it's I'm specifying that it's like because of regulation.
All right. No is no. No is no without this is the glory no, there, of contracts.
This is
and
the
markets.
Good explanation of why it's no. Oh, we need the thought process behind
yes,
it. Me, I'm over here just like, yeah, it'll happen. Sure.
Yeah. I'm buying yes, just because I like the 10% odds. Definitely 10% chance of taking the driver out in California seems at least reasonably well specified relative to I'm going to be able to buy an Optimus from Tesla's website by the mid-26 for 14%. That seems like those markets seem off sides of each other.
That's right around the corner. That one seems like an impossibility.
Yeah. They'd have to manufacture them first. I mean, we're not even in manufacturing stage for those.
Yeah.
So forget. And then if you're going to buy it,
Seems like they'll have use for everything that they manufacture over that time period anyways, right?
Yes. For internal and training purposes, I think they would keep it internal and training rather than selling it off. Since what we've heard from other humanoid robot companies is even if you're still collecting data off it, if you sell it into a structured environment, you basically don't get useful data off of it because it's just like picking up and moving a box. It's like a very bored robot. You need a robot that's being engaged with a lot of different kinds of play, you know, enriched. You need an enriched robot, a robot going to Montessori school.
You know, we will stay tuned. Keep our eyes out and see if we get any updates on either of these prediction markets. But it sounds like an exciting future. And everything you both described, these are good problems to have. Not knowing, you know, where you need to deploy this cash flow, either robotaxis or humanoid robots. That's a good problem. Otherwise, you're in the Apple land of, we'll just buy back our shares. That's boring.
Yes. Yes. I think that they, you know, conditional on Elon's compensation package being approved, I do think Tesla is going to have good places to throw capital for return.
Yes.
And I think they will aggressively do so, which is great for the world, to be honest. Mm-hmm.
All right. Exciting times. Tasha, thank you for joining. Brett, pleasure as always.
Wait. One more thing, Nick. One more thing. Yes. Our first ledger settled. I won the OpenAI releasing a browser.
Yes, you did.
By the end of October. Betting on shipping velocity from AI companies seems to be the right bet.
A good bet right now would just be to fade myself in every prediction I've taken because it's looking pretty bad. So that's the meta trade here.
How many wins have you notched, Brett, in predictions?
Just no, this is we just started,
you know. Yeah, we just
okay, we're starting the count at one.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Stay tuned for Brett's success rate. We all know right. Nick's success rate.
Yeah, no, we're only up from here though. I mean, it's not looking good on the others tracking wise. But it's okay. We're gonna come back strong. All right.
Good to see you guys.
Thank you. ARK Investment Management LLC is an SEC registered investment advisor. ARK and Public are unaffiliated entities and do not have a relationship with respect to either firm marketing or selling the products or services of the other. And therefore, ARK disclaims responsibility for any loss that may be incurred by Public's clients or customers. The information provided in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision and is subject to change without notice. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK, and investors should determine for themselves whether a particular investment management service is suitable for their investment needs. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK and or show guests and are not endorsements by ARK of any company or security or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in the show may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARK's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statements. ARK assumes no obligation to update any forward-looking information. ARK and its clients, as well as its related persons, may, but do not necessarily, have financial interests in securities or issuers that are discussed. Certain information was obtained from sources that ARK believes to be reliable. However, ARK does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information obtained from any third party.